morning, everyone. Welcome to Holy Crap, the Vlogcast. Vlogcast that comes from a skeptical point of view to answer some of the questions of why. This vlogcast started as a combination of spite and the Streisand effect when some people I knew back from high school who were on Facebook were posting things which were factually incorrect, and they liked to use Facebook that way, and they didn't appreciate that my way of using Facebook was to correct such crap and gave me shit about it. Part of this is also to follow through with the old adage that sometimes the journey is more important than the destination. I'm known to shoot in Tribble all over the place. I can be found under most social media under that name. I was born in Brooklyn, New York to a Roman Catholic family. Raised on Long Island, I currently reside outside of Buffalo, New York. I'm an unabashed atheist. Although Pastafarian is really feeling really good. I might consider that a little bit later. Although I don't know what the holy month of Pastafarianism is just yet, you know, I'll see what comes of that. We've got a little bit of a different lineup for everybody, so please don't be filling out your bingo markers just yet. Starting from across the border over north of me into Ontario, good morning, Heretic Woman.
Good morning. And I am, of course, in Ontario, Canada. I started out in the United Church of Canada, which is pretty liberal, all things considered, for church. But, you know, we all do stupid things when we're a teenager, and my stupid thing was to join a Calvinist sect. Don't recommend it. Not one of my brighter choices. But I'm much better now, and I've been an atheist for 26 years, and I spend as much time as I can all over the internets trying to educate rational people and annoy those who choose not to be rational.
Moving to the south of me, to the southwest, I should say, into the Midwest of the U.S. Good morning, Bridget.
Good morning. My name is Bridget Fitch. I was born and raised in the South, raised in the Church of Christ religion, which, if people are not familiar with it, it's very fundy. I bought into it hook, line, and sinker because I didn't know any better, and I made my escape in 2003. So these days, I work against patriarchy and theocracy and used to be live and let live, and now I have become more anti-theist, and I am a poster child for the damage that religion can do to people.
Fair enough. Now, moving to the east and south of me now. Good morning, Joey.
I wouldn't say I'm really east of you at all. I'm almost directly south of you.
East of Bridget, south of... Just do your opening and get done with it, will you please?
Hi, everybody. My name's Joe.
Hi, Joe.
And I'm an alcoholic.
Join the room.
I was born to an Irish Catholic family in Chicago, Illinois. I spent 8 years in the military. I am now living in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania as a graphic designer and as an atheist.
Jumping across the water over to France. Good morning, Joseph.
Good morning. My name's Joseph. Been living in Paris, France since 1989 and originally from London, Ontario, Canada. And I was brought up Anglican, and today I'm doing everything I can to promote critical thought and independent thought.
Thank you. And as you guys might notice, we do have a little bit of a different lineup, like I mentioned. Joining us tonight as a special guest from Pennsylvania, good morning, Beth.
Good morning. Howdy, howdy to the crap crew. And thanks for letting me be on. My name's Beth Hambridge, and I'm originally from Buffalo, New York, but I live in PA. Been here 16 years. I've been out atheist for about 20, 22 years, formerly raised as a Catholic wannabe, i.e. Missouri Synod Lutheran, converted to Pentecostalism, and realized I lost my fucking marbles. So basically, I blog about religious liberty issues, primarily First and 14th Amendments.
There you go. So thank you guys for being with us tonight. And for those of you that are watching live with us, of course, first off, thank you. And please, by all means, take advantage of the question and answer system here on the Google Hangout, and we can see what we can answer for you while we're going along. If there is social stuff that's in there and I see it, I'll let it go for a while until, you know, I'm pretty sure everybody's had the opportunity of seeing it before I get rid of it because, you know, question and answer questions really should be in there, but that's okay. A little social stuff is fine. Katie, hi, we see you over there. And also announcing, hello, Crap Crew. Thank you. Reset your clocks. Okay, now, is this something that I really need to worry about right now? Because I don't think I'm going to worry about that right now.
Is that something that's going on this weekend?
I don't even know at this point.
I really should get a calendar.
Well, Windows 10 has a pretty decent one, actually.
Well, that's a great selling point for Windows 10 right there, isn't it? Me? Bashing on Windows? Ooh, I would never do such a thing. That would be wrong.
I like Windows 10 so far.
That's all well and good. I'm working with the Penguins, so it's just fine. Funny enough about that, by the way, the new shirt. Before I go ahead and get a whole bunch of questions about it, there's a tie-in with my having said the Penguin. I went looking for, you know, started to go looking for my Halloween costume, more appropriately the costume I'm going to be wearing when I go to Fertile Equinox in March. Since the theme this year is superheroes, well, you need a supervillain, and well, I found a Cesar Romero orange-style shirt, so my Joker is going to be a combination of Cesar Romero from the Batman TV show from the 60s and Mark Hamill from Batman the Animated Series from the 90s, and Joey can tell you, when I get going, I can do a pretty damn good impersonation.
That's Cesar Romero orange or Guantanamo orange?
You know, we'll kind of come around to that a little bit. In any event, thanks ever so much for making me feel so much
sorry.
You know what? Screw it. We've almost blown out our PG-13. I'm going to borrow from Eli Bosnick right about now. What color is this? This is orange. Why? Because fuck you, that's why. Okay? Because fuck you.
It's been, what, 10 minutes and we've blown the rating.
Woo. Yeah, you know what? That's fine. What we do on our weekends is our business. You don't like it, you do whatever it is that you want. Meanwhile, let me get everything started over here. With 5 minutes on the clock, your five-minute freestyle starts now. So, what am I talking about? Fanboyism. And some people don't really understand and appreciate exactly what it is. Being a fanboy is a time-honored tradition of insecurity and not feeling that you're up to a particular item, meeting somebody in particular. A couple of years ago, 2007 specifically, I was told, well, to paraphrase from a 80s movie, get your ass to Anthrocon. So I did. I didn't really think that I should, but I basically got told, you will go. It's okay. So I went, and I had the explicit idea in my head that I was going to greet the artist that I had known for a long time and shake their hand and say thank you for all the stuff that they had been allowing me to see. All of the artistry, the stuff that they've shown and shared for free for so many years. So I got the opportunity of meeting a whole bunch of people, including an artist, goes by the name Fossil, the undead artist who did my tattoo on my arm. I got to meet Eric Schwartz, otherwise known as Eric the Schwartz. Those who were in the Amiga circles know him from Sabrina Online and such. I got to meet a lot of really great people, including, believe it or not, I got the opportunity a couple of years ago to interview Peter Beagle, Peter S. Beagle. Some don't recognize the name, some do right away. And before you go asking, yes, the author, Peter Beagle, who wrote The Last Unicorn, amongst other things. I was fortunate enough to get the chance to meet him, even though I was not a direct fan of his. And I didn't realize until after I got done with speaking with him how much of a difference it was in me. The nervous factor was gone. He, even though he had an amazing amount of success with The Last Unicorn and some amazing stories to tell about it, he was just a guy. And he got lucky with a lot of things. And he very blatantly told me, you know, it was not his first choice of favorite stories to tell. He didn't think that it was worth all of what it got, attention-wise. But he admits and accepts that that's what he's going to be pretty well known for the rest of whatever. One of his friends also basically told him the same thing, that that's what happens. But as I got to talk with these people, to interact with them more, I got to meet more people and realize they're just people who have been lucky enough to go with what they know and do, and they're good at it, and they enjoy it, and they like sharing it. I got to meet Agent Elrond. I got to meet the fursuiter known as Telephone. I got to meet Spunky and Ganador and so many more people in the furry community who were artists that were amazing. I got the chance to, even if briefly, interact with John DeLancey at a Star Trek convention just because we happened to be walking through the hall at the same time, and I got to talk with him for a couple of seconds. Armin Shimmerman, I almost had lunch with him, except somebody came up and totally fanboyed all over him. Oh, my cousin's roommate from college, twice removed from my father's second wife, was working on Star Trek in the prop department. You might have seen him as you were passing. Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah, he was a great guy, a wonderful person. Listen, I got to get ready for another talk in a couple of minutes, so I'll catch up with you guys a little bit later. Have a good lunch. Talk to you later. Bye. Being a fanboy isn't a bad thing. It's great to have the enthusiasm that you want to meet these people that have made such an incredible influence on how you feel about things, that have given you a lot of entertainment or something to think about. Would I go absolutely gaga talking with Matt Dillahunty? Sure, absolutely. I was super nervous talking with George Hrob and the Thinking Atheist. And his name escapes me for the moment because I'm blanking. It's okay to want to talk to all these people to say, you've been a great person to me. But just always remember, all of those people are just people. The only difference between them and us, they've gotten lucky in something that they've wanted to do. You want a fanboy all over me? Or us? I'm going to be the first one to tell you, don't. Because what we're doing, you could do. And really, if you want to have the fanboys and fangirls all over for it, good luck. But if you do, come on back and say hi, because it's always good to see people who are trying to find their way through. Good luck with whatever it is that you end up doing. This is episode number 83 of the docket, Your Honor. And I'm not going to sing it because I don't want to get into copyright problems, but who do you love? Basically the question of who comes first, the state or your religious ideology? And I'm using that term very specifically for good goddamned reason. Let's get started with everything over here. Heretic woman, you know the drill, unfortunately. We're looking at Saudi Arabia in particular on this one. Raif Badawi.
Yeah, still there.
As of the recording of the show, it has now been 3 years, 3 months, 17 days that Raif has been unjustly incarcerated for thought crime. Our thoughts and hearts are still with you. We're still hoping, man. We're still hoping. So the places that have been listed in the show notes for tonight, you've got, I don't even want to name these people, but I've got to just to make clarity. For those that are not quite familiar with it or you're watching from way in the future, Kim Davis, stood up for her religious liberties and went to jail for them because Christianity is now an oppressed majority of the population here in the United States. And Sweet Cakes by Melissa are a persecuted majority because they shouldn't be persecuted for breaking the law. I mean, that would be wrong. So now it all comes down to, what the hell are these people thinking? Why do they think that it's okay for them to do this and behave against the norms of society and other people shouldn't? I don't know that any of us really get it, but you know what? We're going to go through this one. Beth, you specifically said that you wanted to come in tonight, and first off, thank you for asking and wanting to. You've been talking, you've been writing, you've been doing a whole bunch of stuff on this. Go ahead and kick this whole damn thing off. Where do you want to start us off with?
Well, I think the biggest thing is, first of all, you have to delineate between, is this their idea? Or, as you will hear on Monday, are they just parroting the talking points of the right? And when I say the right, I mean the extreme right. I call them the right for a reason. If you compare their ideologies, you'll understand why. And I don't use that to be nasty or anything to history. But what people need to understand is the religious right has a plan. They have an agenda. And we all know, basically, it's theocracy. But underpinning that, they have these specific talking points. So, like, I'll use Mike Huckabee as an example. He has been spouting, is Dred Scott still the law of the land? Well, that actually came from Kim Davis's lawyers. So are people just parroting these talking points, these so-called victims like Kim Davis, or is this their actual, are they actually thinking this? I don't think they are. I think they're being sucked in. And a good example is the Kleins. That's Sweet Cakes by Melissa, the Oregon couple. They are now facing a $135,000 fine. Their fine when this started was $2,000. That's it.
Yeah.
There's it went from $2,000 to $135,000. They have, as you noted in your show notes, over $500,000 in GoFundMe.
Yeah. Yeah, there's another piece about this I want to make sure that we get on the record, so to speak. Sweet Cakes by Melissa, what they did wrong, besides being douches, besides other things, was that they ended up publishing the private records, the contact information for the people that were claiming suit for being discriminated against. And that was the biggest part of the whole damn thing. And that's, I think, a piece of this that we're going to end up talking about also, about who's giving what information and is it valid. We're going to get around to that in a little bit, but let's get the groundwork taken care of on all of this. Bridget, you've had the opportunity of seeing, unfortunately, stuff in your home state where stuff has gone poorly because of religious exceptionalism. I mean, that's part of what drew you into wanting to be on the show in the first place. And you know, I remember this all too well because, you know, I threatened your ass too. But what pieces, looking on some of these, because these are only the two most stark examples, do you want to kind of add your perspective or any other stories that you remember that are a similar vein at this point?
I did read something recently within the last few weeks where a judge in Tennessee, which is my home state, had denied a divorce to a couple because of the Supreme Court ruling. He said that he no longer, the state of Tennessee no longer had any way to define what a marriage was. And so even though the couple was in their early 60s and the woman had grounds, he denied the divorce. And, you know, I think that's bullshit.
Mm-hmm. You know, funny enough, I was about to say, you know, funny enough, didn't they rewrite the Bible sometime in England just for exactly the reason of divorce? I'm pretty sure I remember that. I could be wrong. It could have been the thing.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, formed a new church, the Anglican Church, because of that. So, yeah.
Well, yeah, totally.
Mm-hmm. Anglicanism.
Mm-hmm.
And the King James. Mm-hmm. No?
Yeah,
King James as well. But Henry was the one that basically said, you know, I'm kind of tired of this wave. I'd like this one over here. And the Pope said, no. And Henry said, oh yeah, bite me. And kicked the Pope to the curb.
Yeah, I'm of course, pretty
it took 6 years to do that, but...
Yeah, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that oldy English didn't exactly have bite me as part of the vernacular, but I pretty well.
But then again, they are one of the only European nations to turn their back on the church.
Yes.
And who was able to make them pay for it? Beauties of living on an island.
Yep.
There's that now.
Philip of Spain tried to make them pay for it, and his armada got sunk.
Oops.
Yeah, I hate it when that happens. Yeah. Joey, since you popped your head up, I might as well play whack-a-mole with you for a second. We grew up Catholic specifically, and Beth, I know you mentioned it too, but I need to give Joey his opportunity, otherwise he's going to fall asleep on us.
Oh, we don't want that.
Yeah, I know. How many ways can you think of in the Catholic Church can you become, how should we put this, unmarried, divorced, specifically? According to the Roman Catholic...
Well...
Specifically divorced, first.
If we're going specifically for, you know, how they see the end of a marriage, D.
Yeah, that's
about the only way. There are a few finaglings here and there. Like, you can have the Pope absolve your marriage if you can prove in one way or another that your spouse was a heretic or some other nuanced...
Isn't there a clause in there about infertility?
Somewhere buried in the fine print, I'm pretty sure there is.
Yeah, there is.
Yeah, but
the whole goal is making more believer babies.
Yeah, well, because you know Sunday afternoon barbecue is the way to go. Joey, death, and the what happened for my family, of course, which was great. Annulment.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say because there were two situations where I've ever heard of an annulment, and I know of both of them. I'll tell you about that in a second. Finish what your thought was, because.
Well, I was just going to say, same as the whole, you know, absolving a marriage based on, you know, one ground or another, but yeah, that's the proper term, annulment.
Yeah, yeah. For my family. My mom got a divorce, civil divorce, after 30, however many years it was. And, dad, not to be outdone, filed for an annulment, you know, those 30 some odd years later because he wanted to get remarried. There's a thing about that. That ended up with a big rigmarole of timey-wimey stuff, and I'll spare you guys for the right at the moment, but it was a thing.
In a basic sense, what it means is rather than just getting divorced, in the eyes of the church, you were never married.
Which is why I claim to be a retroactive bastard. Thank you. Nice. Thank you very much. now, there's another piece of it, and I would be, and please forgive me for being a little personal for a second, I have a mass card over here that I have kind of mentioned. My buddy, Dr. Bill, who got me on radio way back when, we lost him 6 years ago this past week, and his mass card is still with me next to my computer over here. He was married for less than a month because it turned out that the lady that he married was, how should we best put this, shtupping on the side during their engagement and before and after the marriage. So his mom, who was a nun at one time, obviously before he was born, basically said, yeah, you've got every right to go ahead and get that annulled. So he did, which no end of mirth attached to it because he was a great guy. But
yeah, see, when you started that sentence, I was going to say, found out she was a he? This is why we don't get eloped in Thailand.
Oh, really?
I'm thinking of Madame Butterfly right about now. Am I thinking of the right one, Joe? I'm pretty sure. Those of you that are just listening to the audio portion, yes, just know full well I've just broken Joey. So there you go. So the religious right. God, there's a... Damn it, brain. You and I have to have a long, long, long talk. I'm sorry. I was just remembering... It's just funny. I was just remembering a scene from one of the episodes of Top Gear where they're showing Hitler in the car and he's doing the salute. And... they're asking him what's going on with that, and isn't that wrong? And he's just like, no, he's just trying to give them directions. He's just saying, take the Third Reich. It's like, oh, guys, really? I don't know why that came up. All I know is Brain and I have to have a long talk tonight.
I think I was the one that threw that at you. You know, they're talking about...
I'm going to write that one down.
They're talking about how...
I like that, yeah.
They're talking about how Daimler-Benz, it wasn't the first six-wheel drive vehicle they'd made. And so they go ahead and show an old picture from one of the Reich's parades, and it's Hitler in this six-wheel Mercedes-Benz, you know, standing up doing his little salute, and they're arguing about it. And do you think they didn't mention that in the tour guide for some reason? And no, you see, he's just there. This is before they had indicators, so he's just there giving directions.
And what's he telling them?
Take the Third Reich.
Exactly. That's where it came from. So, yeah, it just look it up. I'm sure you can find it on YouTube.
If you've never heard, Top Gear is an awesome show. Sadly, it was an awesome show.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with all that.
However, it has given us such great things as Take the Third Reich and Jesus Christ on a Bike.
Yeah. So where am I taking this? Well, the direction is really the piece that I'm kind of going with at the moment. Since you mentioned it, Beth, I'm going to kind of open this up for everybody else because you're definitely going to be putting the pin on this one when we get over to you in just a second. Mm-hmm. I want our overall opinion on these lawyers. If the lawyers are feeding these lines from the religious right groups to their clients to say, you should really do this. I am not one that's dealt with lawyers much other than what was necessary for getting the house built and, you know, property transfer and all that stuff, and yay. So I'm not really well-versed on what a lawyer should or shouldn't do ethically, but I'm pretty sure telling your client that you should really do this is really not exactly the right thing to do ethically. Anybody want to jump on that one a sec?
Yeah, lawyers like that are very expensive cherry pickers.
I'm sorry, you just involved the words lawyer and ethic in the same sentence. I'm going to have to call a red flag on that one.
You can go right ahead and do that, but I mean, according to how it's supposed to work, there's supposed to be something in there, you know, trust between thieves or whatever the expression is. Heretic woman, you've been very quiet about this one. I'm kind of wondering, since you guys don't have to deal with this quite nearly as often as we do over here.
There's
got to be something.
I mean, we've had the whole complaint about the wedding cake thing when we first got marriage equality and that, but we haven't really had much of an issue with it. I mean, we've had, you know, we like to call it marriage for a decade now, and nothing's imploded or exploded or anything, but the lawyers, like, it just seems like what's being done right now is they've got their own agenda, and they're looking at these people going, hey, there's a front for our agenda, let's exploit these people. And they're indoctrinated and in that sense dumb enough to think that they have their best interests in mind, when really it's just like, oh, we can use this person as, you know, this year's poster child for, you know, industrialized bigotry. And
industrialized.
You know, yes, industrialized or institutionalized bigotry.
Yeah, that's better.
You know, well, I don't. I was going to say, I don't know that either one of those individually is necessarily strong enough. There's got to be some kind of an amalgamation between them.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, what I think people are failing to miss is these attorneys that have, filed, you know, for these clients are from Liberty University. And if you will recall, that is the university that Michelle Bachman went to get her law degree. And it was founded by Jerry Falwell.
Mm-hmm.
So... yeah. But they're turning them out, you know, left and right, and I don't know that I would consider that a real law degree, but yeah.
Well, and case in point, we have a school like this, I think it was out in BC, that recently was denied accreditation because everybody went, whoa, religious nutbags. Yeah, no, we're not accrediting you. Forget it. And they're like, yeah, but we're law school. They're like, yeah, no, you're not.
Well, to hit on that point just real quick is the assumption as to why Matt Staver resigned as dean of Liberty Law School is they are up for reaccreditation. And if you all remember the Lisa Miller case, the lesbian mothers, they, quote, separated. The one became a, quote, Christian. And to prevent visitation for her ex-spouse, she is now somewhere in South America. Liberty Law School was part of the main impetus behind that whole fiasco. They set it up. They helped her kidnap her child and leave the country. In fact, the lawsuit was dropped. Well, part of the lawsuit was dropped. So they basically are in a boatload of trouble. So they are actually right now trying to save their accreditation. And Liberty Law School, the foundation of it, is actually part of the Right's plan. They want to crank out these lawyers. And if you really dig deep, they're like Roy Moore is part of it. Alliance Defending Freedom is another one. American Family Association, Focus on the Family. All the names you hear in the news, they are all part of this. Patrick Henry College is another one. They specifically, these two schools are geared to churn out people like Sarah Palin, Michelle Bachman, Rick Perry, Mike Huckabee. Glenn Beck's a Mormon, but he falls in there. David Barton. It's not an accident.
Yeah, and that's a piece that's really, really interesting and really important, I think, for this whole damn thing. In the arena of government, I want to try to make sure that I frame this correctly. In the arena of government, by far, the vast majority of people have experience, if not degrees, somehow or other, in law. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there's no accident there. So the idea of turning out people who are lawyers, who have a very specific agenda, mm-hmm. who can find ways of using that and leveraging that and wedging that. Yes, I'm using the term wedge.
It is the proper term to use, because the wedge document that we know that's in the creation evolution debate is now being used in the religious liberty cases that we hear about, that we're talking about tonight. In fact, Wayne Beeson, he's the founder of Truth Wins Out, has actually outlined it in a 10-point plan. And I've mentioned it if you listen to my show, well, mine and Deb's show, and Ashley's. Can't forget Ashley. I've mentioned it before, and I've mentioned it elsewhere on the radio. It's the he has a 10-point plan of how the religious right is taking over. And one of the primary is, and you've heard, I know you guys have all heard the term, Seven Mountains Mandate. Mm-hmm. And part of the Seven Mountains Mandate, basically, is the seven, what they call the seven pillars of society, which include government, education, family, religion, entertainment, business, and media.
It sounds like communism.
Why do you think I call them the Reich? This is why. Okay.
But they, religion is totalitarianism.
Well, yeah. But what I'm saying, basically, they find these seven things, they want to take over them. Literally, take over them. And base it on their version. And I say their version because if you don't believe the same, you might be a Christian, but if you don't believe exactly the way they do, you're no better than me as an atheist and a lesbian.
Yeah.
And just to give you how they are doing this, remember the spat of Jesus movies last year? Noah? What was the other one? Didn't they do one on Exodus? I don't go to the movies, so.
Yeah, there was a whole wave of them.
There was like that, God's Not Dead. And,
yeah. Those, that's taking over media, arts and entertainment. That was planned. That's,
well, they're trying.
Yeah, well, they're doing it very well, too. I mean, and the problem is this is not a Reader's Digest subject, so I'm trying not to go up too off the rails. But, yeah, Seven Mountains Mandate is their whole thing. Education, you see it in Liberty University and Patrick Henry.
So the money, it all comes from the same spot? Or?
Yes. Oh, yeah. In fact, hold on, let me pull it up. It's what I'm going to talk about Monday, but I'll give you a little hint. Hold on, let me go back and find it.
And since you're mentioning about the various movies and such, one of the movies that is at the movie theater that we went to is War Room. And I was thinking, wait a minute, I think I've heard this one before. War Room, isn't that it? And I started to pull up all the information. Oh, like, yeah. It's another one of those God movies. That's nice.
What's
That's quaint.
War Room.
Yeah, what's... I hadn't heard of that one.
Let's see. Bad shit happens. People get together, pray, and bad shit's no longer bad anymore. So, yeah. Yay for them.
It's a ball pit gone wrong.
Nope. Just be called nope.
Yeah. Okay. This is what I'm going to be talking about this on Monday, but it's pertinent. If you guys remember Cliven Bundy. So yep. During that time period, Bruce Wilson, who's a writer for Truth Wins Out, and he's a very well-researched writer, there is an annual conference called The Gathering, and they give away up to $1 billion a year. Much of the money is given to Christian organizations, which I mentioned, Alliance Defending Freedom. The largest donor to this conference is called the National Christian Foundation. Google it, people. Which last year they gave away, well, this would be 2 years ago, which they gave away 2 years ago, $670 million.
Jeez Louise.
There is your money. Now, donors to them include Hobby Lobby, Walton's from Walmart, dude from Papa John's, Wilkes Brothers, they're behind Ted Cruz, if I remember correctly. Yeah, it's huge money behind this.
Now, there's a piece about this that I want to make sure that people understand. We're not saying that organizations putting money into anything is necessarily wrong.
Right.
Whether it's a good thing or a bad thing is a different animal entirely, but it's not wrong. I mean, that's one of the things here in the U.S. where if you want to do something like that, yeah, you can. Unfortunately, that also ends up generating into politics, which is, again,
Citizens
not...
United.
Yeah, which, again, is not wrong. It's just bad. But
it is, because they the fact that money's in politics, that gives them a power that your average Joe doesn't have. I mean, we're supposed to be part of a democracy. And
we are actually an oligarchy right now.
Yeah.
So that's that makes things just so much more. Yeah, Bridge?
As I said, yeah, we are an oligarchy now, for all intents and purposes. And if
we're doing everything we can to deny it.
And if anybody else wants to go down a rabbit hole, which Beth is really good at sending people down rabbit holes, go Google Dominionism or Christian Reconstruction.
Yes. I was trying to avoid that topic altogether.
What is that?
Google it.
Yeah, there's really no easy way to define Christian Reconstructionism. The problem becomes is there's Dominionist ideology and Dominionist theology. Reconstructionism falls under both. Or it can be its own umbrella term. But most of the people we have now that are in power, politicians, are Reconstructionists. They want to reconstruct the nation based on biblical ideology.
It's a dictate at the base.
Yeah.
It always comes back to that.
They're wanting a theocracy.
Yeah. If you Google Reconstructionism, one name you'll come across is John Russo Rush Dooney. Also Francis Schaeffer in Christian Manifesto. He is actually the modern, i.e., post Roe v. Wade. In fact, Christian Manifesto was written in opposition to the Roe v. Wade ruling in 72-73. So, yeah, as I said, this. You can trace the roots of this whole theocratic movement actually back to, some say Roe v. Wade, some take it even back to the whole segregation issue. It actually goes even back further to the 50s with McCarthyism and all that. I mean, it's a very, very tangled web.
Yeah, that's when they got on the bandwagon, or that's when they got their toe in the door, so to speak.
Yeah, I've been researching it 7 years, and I still just, my head spins, and there's writers out there that have been doing it for 20, 25 years. So.
And I suppose these are the same people responsible for dumbing down education, or making it so expensive.
Yes, they are. Just look at Texas, prime example.
So there's a piece about this that you're now looking into, which is actually makes it very very good for me at this point. Texas is one of those areas where the school board was in a big battle, ideological battle, with what was going to happen with the biological texts, whether they were going to put Darwin's theory of evolution out there unblemished, or if they were going to put stickers or new textbooks that actually said, well, you know, there are some people that say maybe there's another way, or specifically wording it as you should really investigate as fully as possible all of the possible outcomes. Joey, I want to get you on this one, because I think that you might have some kind of an ideal on this one. Ideal idea. Oh, God, I can talk tonight. I'm sorry. the idea of I don't want to say demoralizing, but adding FUD to the equation. For those that don't understand, FUD is a term that I learned when I was learning about how Microsoft has done its business practices for a long time. FUD stands for F-U-D, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. That can really change how people think about a situation, how they tackle a situation. And in your past military, I got to believe that that's something that you guys had some kind of study into, or at least some training into understanding it.
Well, I mean, there's a few examples, historically speaking, like Beth had mentioned with McCarthyism, you know, the big Red Scare. Everybody knew that there was no established religion with the Soviet Union. They kind of shunned religious authority for the most part. And so part of what resulted from that was the whole, we're good, God-fearing American Christians, and we're not going to stand for this anymore. And that's kind of how it got really kicked up a notch in our country, you know, back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. But that's kind of the same way it's treated nowadays, taking it from other than a Christian perspective. That's kind of the way it works in the Middle East nowadays. You know, if you were to this is kind of the way the mindset goes over there. This is how they end how these extremist groups over there end up with the support that they do. You know, if you were to take away the authority established through the religion, what authority would there be? Otherwise, you're dealing with pretty much tribal law. It's different for every tribe. Or in the more organized countries like Iraq and such, you're dealing with, you know, a government that may or may not be just, you know, corrupt to the core. And, you know, who's going to keep your interests in mind? Well, that's pretty much how it ends up working out for them.
Religion wants to tell you what your interests are.
That too.
Yeah, and funny enough, you launched me right into a piece. Heretic Woman, I wanted to get back on this one. Rafe Badawi is a perfect example of this. You start throwing the fear, uncertainty, and doubt, even if it's well established and a valid item, you get an incredible blowback, as unfortunately he's found out, and the bloggers in Bangladesh.
Yes. Yes, and it's funny because the things that Rafe had been saying in his blog weren't really that extreme by any stretch. It was, you know, maybe we should think about other ways of looking at stuff, and, you know, like the most extreme thing I read of his was where he kind of said, you know, theocracy really doesn't work very well. Yeah, and that was the gist of what he said, and they lost their shit.
That's another case of, you know, he may not have directly done it himself, but he inadvertently brought into question, in the eyes of the masses, the authority of the established regime.
Yeah.
And, well, historically speaking, we've seen how that turns out.
Yeah. And the thing that gets me, though, is these regimes don't seem to realize is that by overreacting to such a ridiculous degree, they're basically telling everyone we don't have confidence in our own regime. It's like, well, we have to quash, like, every single solitary blip of discord because, you know, we're afraid of a guy with a keyboard. It's
because it won't stand up to questioning. I mean, you know, if they wanted to be a dictate and dictate morals, like, you know, decide for people what they should and shouldn't do, what's good and bad for them, then they'd you know, they'd update their morals from time to time. But these guys, they've just wrapped themselves in this invented story of lies. The lies have become more important than the dictate. and the lies just don't stand up to questioning.
Yeah. And it's a lot of, you know, where I'm right and it doesn't matter what anybody says, you know, our book is right and our deity is right and we're right and, you know, STFU, the rest of you kind of thing.
Thank you for that self-edit. That was very nice of you. Appreciate that. It's bad enough. As far as to feeding the lie, Bridget, I want to get back for you one more time before I come back around, because I something I want to get Joseph on in a second. One of the lies that has been a huge, huge thing, and I know that you can speak to this one almost perfectly, the lie of the religious persecution of Christians here in the U.S. You've heard people who have said so many times that it's so bad and the whole the blah, 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 you know, just yakking away. You've heard this often enough.
Mm-hmm. They've got fodder now with this shooting in Oregon. They're gonna run with that.
And you know what's stupid about that? I was just reading Seth Andrews, was it Seth? Yeah. No, sorry, it was Hemant Mehta I was reading this morning.
Yep.
And it wasn't, you know, the rhetoric you're seeing is, oh, he asked if you're a Christian, and if they said yes, you shot him in the head. No. What he did was ask people, are you religious? Do you have a religion? You know, what's your... I mean, as sick and twisted as it is, he was trying to make small talk with them and kind of say, oh, you have a religion? Well, you know, you're going to go see your maker now, that kind of thing. It had nothing to do with them being a Christian specifically. It was more so him being a twisted freak and be like, oh, good, you have somebody for me to send you to. Bye, kind of thing.
Well, what's and, even... Yeah. Sorry, Dub. Didn't mean to cut you. What's even worse is since Hammett's article has come out, supposedly there is a manifesto. A unconfirmed source has stated that he is a, quote, Satanist. He follows the left-hand path. Yeah, this is getting and the religionists are running with it.
Of course they are.
And, yeah. And supposedly he did have a mental illness, whether he was under treatment or not. And didn't I call it, Deb?
Yep.
I said last night to Deb, before any of this came out, guaranteed kid's got a mental illness and he stopped taking his medication. And I'm not saying that to be nasty. I have bipolar disorder. So, yeah. Bad.
Yeah.
So we're going to run with it.
So, getting specifically back onto this about the authority, because we've gotten a lot of different pieces to kind of swirl into this drain, unfortunately. And forgive me for wording it that way. With these topics, we end up with a lot of this stuff where we end up hitting a lot of different pieces that are kind of peripheral before we really tackle into the middle of it all, which in this case is. Why should these people think that their religious authority should be the authority? And Joseph, you've had, I haven't had as much time for you, and you're one of those people that tends to have a really good bead on a lot of stuff. So I figured I'd get you at this point. Your opinion on this. What makes these people think that this is what should be above and beyond the law of their land actual?
Because it's working for them. I mean, whatever they've been doing all these years, it's levered them into a position of power that they want at all costs to keep. And that's it. I mean, look at them. I mean, they're not educated in anything useful. And they've managed to find a manipulation technique that's shot them to the top of the that shot them into a position of power. And I mean, that's it. And because their position is based on something that doesn't require education at all, they can't justify their position.
You know what you're describing? I was trying to think about the way that you're talking about this. What you're describing to me sounds like cronyism. People get into positions of power, and then they keep bringing in more people of the same ilk. Forgive me for wording it this way. To go up the ladder that they've started putting up for them.
It's cronyism mixed with manipulation. It's like they go hand in hand, and they just climb over each other with every generation. With every new generation of quote unquote followers, they have yet more appeal to authority.
Yeah, Joey. I mean, you grew up in Chicago, which has a long running history of nepotism and cronyism in the city government and such. Does this sound like it's got any kind of water to hold to you?
From the religious aspect, absolutely. I mean, look at how the Catholic Church started out.
Fill in the gaps a little bit, because
okay, when back then it was just Christianity, because there was no different
denomination.
The Romans, you know, persecuted it for a time, outlawed it, but it started to get into the population. It started in the dregs of the population, then started working its way into the merchant class, then eventually started working its way into the army, and then you start having generals who, you know, at the behest of their soldiers, start converting, and the next thing you know, you have an emperor, Constantine, who converts, and all of a sudden the emperor of the Roman Empire is a Christian.
It's exactly what's going on with the politicians in the U.S. even right now, pandering to the religious right. It's exactly what went on then. I mean, because the Roman Empire was failing, it was just a big appeal to popularity. So to get the confidence of the masses back, he pandered to the.
It's just. What we see now is it's kind of working in reverse. You have the highly religious at the top, and they're trying to get more and more people to be more and more religious at the bottom so that they have a better foundation to hold up their side of the power. Mm. It's the same way that, you know, presidential campaigns work. You go for a presidential campaign, You try to convince as many voters as possible that you have their best interests in mind.
Are they doing that? Actually, they're trying to tell people their best interests.
Well, they are trying to tell people their best interests, but at the same time, they're kind of pretending that, you know, we know what your best interests are, and you know they'll cherry pick and, you know, do the umbrella thing that, you know, who in their right mind wouldn't want, you know, to be able to walk down their street safely without, you know, fear of being mugged or whatever.
See, now I've got something that's going through my head. No. You don't know what you want. Luigi knows what you want. You don't know what you want. Luigi knows. Richard, what was it you wanted to drop?
I was going
to
say the thing that I think people are missing. Now, some people obviously are pandering, but a lot of the people that ran in 2012 for the GOP nomination and several that are running this time are not pandering. They are true believers. You look at Mike Huckabee. You look at Rick Santorum. They're theocrats. They're not pandering. This is what they believe. And I think there's a big difference between believing and pandering.
Yeah. It's not so direct. I mean, these politicians, okay, there's a few of them who know full well what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Huckabee knows.
Yeah.
But he's a dangerous person.
Yeah.
I just wanted to add, sorry.
Yeah, that,
you know, until now, Christianity, they were happy to just stay behind the curtain, so to speak. They would just live off a profitable society. And the fact that they're coming to front stage like this, for me, it's almost a sign of desperation. It's either a power grab or a sign of desperation.
See, now you're leading a bit. That's where I'm going to end up going in just a second. Before we get to that, though, Beth, was there anything that you wanted to add on to how this has been playing so far before
we
jump over?
I'm chuckling to myself because you guys have used, like, pandering authority. Think of what is at the base of all of this. Okay, keep that in mind. I'm going to read a quote to you from an article I posted a few years ago.
Sure.
Okay, and it does fit in. You'll just bear with me. It says, sitting with Ken Ham and Terry Mortensen, who is one of his cohorts, a historian of geology and a theologian on staff, this is AIG, I asked why it is important to convince their visitors, more than 2 million since the museum opened 7 years ago, that Genesis is a book of history. Okay, this is Ham speaking. There's a slippery slope in regards to authority, Ham replied. If you say that the history in Genesis is not true, then you can just take man's idea as true. When you go outside of scripture, why shouldn't you just reinterpret what marriage means? So our emphasis is on the slippery slope regarding authority. Morton stays on the subject and he goes on. The homosexual issue flows from this. Genesis says that God created marriage between one man and one woman, which it does not. He didn't create it between two men or two women, or two men and one woman, or three men, blah, 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 blah. If other parts of Genesis aren't true, then how could this idea of marriage be true? If there is no Adam and Eve, and we're all evolved from ape-like ancestors, and there's homosexuality in the animal world, and if Genesis is mythology, then you can justify any behavior you want. And this is the author speaking. I found this preoccupation with gay marriage significant because it suggests that perhaps at least some of those who profess a belief in creationism might simply be signaling their preference for a more traditional social order rather than a rejection of modern science and free intellectual inquiry.
Basically meaning everything's been fine up until this point. Why are you rocking the boat? Stop screwing around with the way that stop taking things and moving them around on me. My stuff is nice and pretty and just the way I want it, and stop getting it around, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, think of it this way. If you remove the creation story from Genesis, what happens?
No original sin.
Which leads to Deb Noses.
No need for Jeebus.
Which leads to?
No Christianity.
Bingo!
No. So the Jews were right.
Yes.
Yeah. Shoot you. Oh, go ahead, sorry.
No, go ahead, Joe.
Well, I was just going to say, Shujin, you said, you know, everything's been all right up until this point. For anybody who says that,
yeah,
I would direct them to go speak to the Jewish community, the Roma community, the Slavic community, because I'm pretty sure they would strongly disagree.
Yeah, but they don't matter because they're not the Catholics. I mean,
the African community, the Aboriginal community.
What they want to say is it's working for us.
The Native American community. I'm pretty sure there's quite a few people you could find that would disagree with that statement.
Yeah.
Yes, but the thing of it is, it's because it's not them.
Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter. Them.
Yep.
By the way, goes back to the Athenians.
How so?
Well, you know, these major religions are the majority, and therefore, you know, strength in numbers. And as the Athenians said when they sacked one of the Spartan cities, the strong do what they will, and the weak suffer what they must.
And, of course, as we learned from the translation from the original in Klingon, the victors write the history. But that's a whole other thing. Heretic Woman, by the way, you remember last week, I think it was, your audio started to get like kind of wonky and whatnot. It started to do that again. I don't know if you want to drop and rejoin to kind of clear that again.
Is it still doing it?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, it is. Yeah, if I remember right, just dropping out and Google coming back sucks. In should we? We love you, Google. Thank you for free service. We appreciate it. Thank you so much. Don't piss off people. Would you please?
Yeah. Get away.
We'll see you back in just a couple of seconds. Anyway, so there's a piece about this that, like what you were saying, Beth, the want for a traditional lifestyle, traditional roles, things were fine. This has got everything to do with keeping the religious exceptionalism.
Exactly.
And it doesn't necessarily need to be the religious, but the economic even, and mm-hmm. kind of goes hand in hand, I would think.
Well, let me put it to you this way. Liberty Council currently is pulling in best guesstimates, and these are low, $1 million a day since the Kim Davis affair began.
Oof.
And those are, yes, unconfirmed numbers. Okay? $1 million a day. That's not going to her. That's Liberty Council alone. Alliance Defending Freedom, who is the impetus behind about 85% of the religious liberty cases, is pulling in close to $1.5 million every time one comes to light. And they have another one on the docket. Jack Phillips, Masterpiece Bakery in Colorado, has an appeal coming up soon. These are cash cows.
How are the estimates?
Well, their annual revenues, the people that do the number crunchings, basically, they are guessing, but every press release that Liberty Council releases, which on average is at least one a day, if not more, they are asking for money. Average donation is anywhere from $25 to $100 per email/letter. They are mailing out close to $1.2 million a day.
Mm.
I mean, nobody has really said, like, dead on where they can actually cite source. Liberty is not very good about releasing their financials, and it wouldn't even.
Why.
So yeah, the estimate is, and they think it's a low estimate, is they're pulling in approximately $1 million a day. Now Kim Davis cannot, well, at least through GoFundMe, anyways, financially benefit, and the question also arises is that Kentucky is what is called the Son of Sam state. Although she was not charged criminally, per se, but she was charged with contempt, Son of Sam means you cannot financially benefit from your crime. Again, so any donations would, you know, it's kind of a sticky wicket of whether she will benefit financially even after this is finally settled, which Liberty will keep it going as long as they can to bring in the funds.
And by the way, for folks that like to know about the math, I just really did really quickly just did a quick computation. Assuming 1.5 million emails with a return of 1% of those emails, with a minimum of $25 being donated through each of those being generated 1% of 1.5 million. We're talking about an income of $375,000. That is a ridiculously low number if you consider that most most mailings for promotions for software, which is what I dealt with before, would be estimating somewhere in the 14% range for, you know, acceptable, where they would expect 14% would come back, because otherwise, I mean, why would you send out all the stuff? And, you know, let's face it, a mil and a half of direct emailing is just one item when you consider that these are going to go out and some people are going to tell other people, and maybe they're going to put in more, maybe they're less, a lot of times more, because you send out to your big donors, they're much more inclined to send you, you know, more $100 or $2,000, $3,000 because they can.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's the well, Joey, you were saying it before, the power in numbers, especially when those numbers happen to have dollar signs in front of them.
Well, look how Bernie Sanders' campaign is going. I mean, he's got no super PACs and all this, and these are like small contributions, and he's made more money over the past days than Hillary Clinton. Sorry, Joe.
No, that's fine. I was going to say, think of it this way. How do you think the Catholic Church for the longest time was the most financially powerful establishment on the planet?
It's a pyramid scheme.
All those alms you would get that you would pay into your local church, yeah, some of it would go to the church itself, some of it would get cycled back, you know, to Rome. And, you know, they came up with all sorts of schemes, everything from the Inquisition to,
I forget. Indulgences.
Yes, those are the ones.
See, I'm a good Catholic boy. I remember my shit.
It's really easy to get oodles and noodles of land when you start killing the people that own it.
Oh, now see, now you're picking on the people. Why would you do that?
Well, you might want to explain indulgences for those who might be scratching their heads.
I love indulgences.
Okay, indulgences basically work like this. You do something wrong, according to the big Holy See's book of let's spin the wheel of morality, and you could do your Hail Marys, or, you know, you could save your ever-loving soul by bribing the guy that's in charge of deciding whether you're going to hell or not, or at least the guy that's in charge here on Earth, because, or, you know, that's what you do.
Or you could, and this was another thing, you know, you could literally pretty much hire a priest or even a clergy, a whole clergy, to pray for you.
Yeah. Well, and could you not actually purchase an indulgence ahead of whatever sin it was you were planning to commit? Yeah.
You know, warfare comes to mind.
Well, you know, that's something else, because, you know, up to that point, you know, Christianity had been the religion of peace, and, you know, everybody's on equal footing so long as you're paying your priest. But then you start seeing the combination of religion and martial talent. You know, the Crusades, the Knights Templar, you know, before they had their falling out. The Hospitallers.
They were the same.
The Crusades.
One and the same, yeah.
And imagine how much money was brought into the church from the sacking of from Acre, from Jerusalem, from
Well, let's call a spade a spade, shall we? From everywhere.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of wondering if that's not continued to this day in some way or other. Bridget, you haven't had a lot to drop into this, and I don't want you to think that I'm, you know, leaving you out of it all. You've seen where people who have had lines of power, I guess probably the best way I can put it, where they have had religious backing through business, through local the local populace, where they kind of act like they are impervious to any kind of, I don't know, questioning. Haven't you seen stuff like this happening in like I said, business or just in the populace or something like that? I thought maybe you had some kind of view on that somewhere.
I do see it in some of the red states that I have lived in and the one that I live in now. You know, pretty much the religious people have taken over this state and they do what they want to and there are no repercussions. And they still scream about being persecuted, so go figure.
Yeah, that's, you know, we need to hit this persecution thing one more time. We've done it before, but I think we really need to hammer this one home one more time. And I'm not a mathematician. I'm not a math whiz. I don't do statistics really well. As a matter of fact, I'm lucky enough I actually remember what a triangle is supposed to look like most of the time. Although, if you were to ask me, yes, I can actually construct a triangle with three equal right angles. Just don't ask me to do it when I'm sober. Or actually, maybe you could. If you figure out how to do it, by the way, good on you. You actually understand about stuff. If you are already part of a group that is of a majority, by definition, usually, let me rephrase that. It is almost impossible. It is not impossible. It is almost impossible for you to be persecuted and downtrodden and pushed aside and not allowed to take part in stuff and be have the law pushed against you. It's almost impossible. There is one notable exception, and I'll come to that in a second. If you are 80% of the population, for instance, in the U.S., you can get laws passed to change something that's wrong for yourself if it's really happening that way. And if you're 80% of the population and more in the government, how the hell is it that laws are being made that are persecuting against you? How does that work? I don't quite get that. Does anybody remember what the only real big back flip-flop on that one, the mirror image to that one was? Do I have to go ahead and tell, or does anybody remember? I got to go ahead and tell it, don't I? South Africa.
Yeah.
And now I'm blanking on what the right term was.
Apartheid.
See, I great. Now I got little Stephen running through my head. I ain't got to play Sin City. That's great. That's great. You don't know about that song? Congratulations. A, you're young. B, you really should look that one up.
Somebody had actually brought up a comment with me in the past week. Religious fundamentalism and theocracy is basically, in a way, saying, you know, apartheid had some good ideas.
Gonna go with no on this one. I'm pretty sure that I'm right.
That's the absurdity of it. That's
yeah. I know. It's okay. And by the way, Toad, thank you for watching. Orange. The question comes up. What color is your shirt? Orange. It is Joker orange. If you when you get the opportunity, watch the show again a little bit later. You'll see early on in the show I make specific mention about it, and it's good. It's all good. I know. It looks weird on my cameras the way that it is. So, yeah, the whole 80% versus, you know, everybody else. Beth, you've been, like you said, you came in because you wrote a whole bunch of this stuff. Come on, this whole Christian persecution thing, come on. How crap is this? I mean, it's got to be even more crap than what I'm sugarcoating.
Well, it comes down to this, in my opinion. We are a nation of laws based on a document called the Constitution. The problem becomes when my rights collide with a religionist's rights. Basically, what they are saying, and this is one of the keys to the recent Obergefell's ruling in June that legalized same-sex marriage for the whole country, and it was in Justice Kennedy's opinion that he brought up the Dred Scott, which also aligns with the whole apartheid issued with South America. And if you remember with slavery, and when as it went into the 19th, early 20th century, it was the whole separate but equal. And in Kennedy's ruling, he basically said that by not allowing same-sex marriage, that is what you're doing. It's separate but equal because they can just have civil unions. Well, that's separate but equal. And he cited the Brown v. Board of Education in his thing, and basically what he was saying, to allow this separate but equal type thing is, you know, it would be allowing it, and there's really no justification. We know what separate but equal led to. Whites here, blacks here. I mean, now it's whites here, anybody that's not white over here.
Yep, the lunch counters, the white-only drinking fountains, the Mexicans do not need to apply here, that kind of crap.
I mean, I'm sorry, but when there's more churches in this country than there are schools.
Yeah.
There are more churches in this country than there are schools.
You know, we should have the guys from Barroom Atheist on here and find out if there are more bars than there are churches or schools at this point, too. I'm pretty sure somebody should know.
Yeah. If you ever listen to Matthew the Apostle on In the Name of God, the podcast, he does a bit called Strip Mall Church of the Week.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever he does that, so he'll highlight a specific utterly ridiculous story of criminality in the church, which is, you know, his whole show. But he picks a more than stellar example. And highlights, he'll give like a little history about the town and whatever. But he'll look up the location of the church, and every single one of them has a ripper joint within a block of it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, a what now?
A ripper joint. Strippers.
Oh, okay. I heard rip.
Rippers. We call them rippers. In some colloquialism. It
must be a Canadianism.
I think so, as in they rip their clothes off, but or peeler is another one.
I've heard it referred to as the Canadian ballet, but okay.
But it's either they've got strippers within a block or an adult store or sometimes both.
It's convenient placing, I suppose.
I think so. I always find it rather amusing.
It was Oscar Wilde who said that churches and brothels have a incestuous relationship.
Smart, insightful man, yeah. Yeah, Beth.
I was going to say, going back to what you're saying, though, I'll give you a personal experience. I'm gay. I have been my entire life. I won't say I was born that way, but I probably was. I was adopted into a fundamentalist Christian family, so no, I was not surrounded by other homosexuals. So in my work life, I have lost 2 job promotions and 1 job because I'm gay. If you want to talk persecution, I would say that's persecution. Bridget, I did an interview with her when the whole Indiana RFRA BS began. She's faced the same thing. well, her family. And that was one of her biggest fears when it started for her because of you know, personal issues. I'm sorry, but when my boss, for any freaking reason, can just fire me because I'm gay, that's persecution.
And it gets to be one of these weird things. And forgive me for playing devil's advocate for just a couple of seconds. There's a reason for it.
I love that game.
There are ways around that, and I'm forgive me, is leaving a really bad taste in my mouth for even talking this through. There are places, typically entire states, that are right to work. I believe I
live in a right to work state currently. I did when I was in New York. We were right to work state then. If your state does not have an anti-discrimination law on the books, and you are in a right-to-work state, there is nothing that can be done from a legal standpoint. The caveat to that, if you have the time, the energy, and the money, you can challenge it on the 14th Amendment if you want to spend the next 25 years in a courtroom.
But this is where it gets to be even worse, because the term right to work is a complete misnomer.
Yes.
Right to work basically means yeah.
You don't have a right to work.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, what the right is for an employer to say, I will hire you and I will fire you, and whatever reason it is my reason, and I don't have to give you whatever it might be, because if I say any reason for why I'm firing you, that could be used to say it was unjust.
Yes.
But if I just say, don't want to hire you anymore, don't want you on the books, you, whim of the imagination, doesn't matter, you can't say anything, because how are you going to prove that it was black women who were left foot dominant that were all being fired because that's who was. Well, how would you ever know?
Yeah. And you kind of make an interesting point there, and it kind of does tie into what we're talking about, is that although the right tries to separate the issue of Kim Davis with the bakers and the photographers, there is no issue. They broke the law, plain and simple. Okay, I do not see an issue because Kim Davis works for the government. Okay, between her and I'll use the Kleins because I know that case the best. Okay, they both broke the law. Okay, but the problem is, how would me going into Melissa Klein's bakery know she's a Christian? How would I know me as a lesbian going into her bakery that she's against gay marriage? Does she advertise it? I'm an anti-homosexual bakery.
And
no.
They won't.
So they, yeah, exactly. So what they are doing, instead of just saying, and I've done it, I used to cater. I had my own catering business for 10 years. I had a client who I knew I could not work with, and it wasn't because of religious reasons. She was a biatch and nitpicky, and no matter what I did, I knew I would not be able to please this one. I just basically said, sorry, I'm booked. Why specifically would somebody like Melissa Klein or Baronel Stoltzman or the Ogards or Elaine Photography, how would anybody know they're Christian?
And this is why
said they were.
And
unless
this is
they
also
use their religion.
Go they ahead. Should advertise.
This is why I have no sympathy for these people, because there's a way to exercise their religious convictions without making a federal case of it. But they have all insisted on making a federal case out of it. So like Beth said, All they needed to do is say, you know what, I'm booked that day, I'm really sorry. Or in the case of the bakery, I don't have the skill to do that, or whatever excuse, we're closed that day, whatever the hell they want to come up with. And just to have their convictions and practice their religion in that manner without making a federal case and without being a dick to somebody because exactly. of who they are. Yeah. But they deliberately choose the opposite because they want to make a federal case out of it.
I'm special.
And that's why I have zero empathy or sympathy for them. And to get back to the whole persecution thing, and I've said this on the show before, and I'll say it again. Take one of these twits, put them on a plane to Saudi Arabia, put them in the town square of Riyadh, and tell them to preach about how great Jesus is, and we'll see how long they keep their heads. That, my friends, is persecution.
But I'm Saeed Abedini, and I'm being imprisoned because I'm a Christian. No, yeah. Dummy. Yeah, went over there and broke their laws. Granted, I yep. don't agree with their laws, but you still broke the law over there. See, that's the thing. Yeah. They wouldn't be persecuted had they not brought it up themselves. You can't persecute somebody who's willing to be persecuted. I have no way of knowing, unless I walk into a Christian bookstore that says it's a Christian bookstore, I have no way of knowing that Joe Blow is a Christian.
It works for them both ways because they invite their persecution. It's actually advertising for them.
Oh, yeah.
And by not putting a sign in the window saying, okay, we're a Christian bakery, so we don't serve your kind, whatever it is. Go on.
The states that brought in the religious freedom laws, and I forget which one. Reasonable businesses, they were afraid. I think it was Indiana.
Yeah, it was Indiana. The stickers.
The reasonable people were like, holy crap, you know, large names are pulling out of Indiana left, right, and center. We don't want to go bankrupt because of the bigot squad. So they put stickers that saying, you know, we serve everyone with rainbows, and which obviously meant, hey, we like gay people too. Mm-hmm. And the religious bigots objected because it meant that people would then know that they were bigots. Yeah. And it's like, okay, well, you're the one that wanted to be the bigot, and everybody know about it when you didn't get your own way, so suck it up.
Well, part of the problem too is during that time period, I think it was when the first or second ruling in the Klein case came out, Theodore Shobot, who is Waleed Shobot, fake ex-terrorist now turned Christian, his son, went around to known pro-LGBTQ bakeries and made a video, and he purposely asked for something derogatory. Josh Feuerstein did it also, but stupid idiot that he is, he went to a cookie joint and asked for a cake. And then he also recorded the phone call with, and it was a two-party state, so yeah, he could get in legal trouble for that. But the point being is that they're saying these pro-LGBTQ bakeries discriminated against me because they wouldn't do this, quote, and I'm going to use this word loosely, hate cake. Okay? Well, the funny thing is, before they did this, hidden inside Jack Phillips, the Masterpiece Bakery cake case, his lawyer brought up during the trial about the same type of scenario. And this is right directly from the ruling, and this is the judge speaking. Finally, respondents argue that if they are compelled to make a cake for a same-sex wedding, then a black baker could not refuse to make a cake bearing a white supremacist message for a member of the Aryan nation, and an Islamic baker could not refuse to make a cake denigrating the Quran for the Westboro Baptist Church. However, neither of these fanciful hypothetical situations prove respondents' point. In both cases, it is the explicit, unmistakable, offensive message that the bakers are asked to put on the cake that gives rise to the baker's free speech right to refuse. That, however, is not the case here, where respondents refuse to bake any cake for complainants, regardless of what was written on it or what it looked like. Respondents have no free speech right to refuse because they were only asked to bake a cake, not make a speech.
Well, I can imagine if a bakery is asked to make a cake that looks like your water bottle, Deborah.
Yes.
Well, here's the caveat to Joseph, is that, and this did happen at Azuka Bakery in Colorado also. A gentleman, I can't remember his name, went in and asked for a Bible-shaped cake, supposedly, yeah. And I've had conflicting what it, he handed him a piece of paper, and it supposedly said, God hates fags. That's what he wanted printed on the cake. Now, she refused to do it. She said, I will bake you the cake and give you the supplies to decorate it yourself. I will not be party to hate speech. Now, I'm using hate speech loosely. Legally, it hit me a totally different definition than how we use it in everyday vernacular. She was found innocent, and of course, the right went totally bonkers, saying discrimination, yada yada, special rights for her because she's pro-LGBT. Now, this bakery was advertised as a pro-LGBT bakery. The reason she won was because not only would she not make the cake for him, she would not make it for any customer.
Yeah.
It's called offering a limited menu.
Mm-hmm.
If you refuse to bake a cake for Joe because he wants a picture of a ding-dong on his cake, and you do that to everybody that walks in your store, you are fine. Because you didn't just do it to him. You did it to everybody that wanted something disgusting put on their cake.
It becomes
but
then
if
like
you
a
do
policy.
It for one person, yeah, yeah. If it's your store policy, and that's what the right is missing.
Yeah.
Just because they'll bake a cake for them, they just won't do a wedding cake. Well, if you will refuse a wedding cake to A, but give it to B through Z, that's offering a limited menu. You can't do that. That's what's illegal in states that have the anti-discrimination laws. You'll hear from the right, well, fine, I'm going into a Jewish deli and asking for bacon. Well, if they don't sell it to begin with, they don't have to sell it to you because they don't offer it.
And it's like, obvious that it's a Jewish bakery.
Well, and that's like going into a car parts store and asking that they provide you with toothpaste, you know?
Exactly, yeah. And that's what those on the right side of the issue, or we'll use the right left here, they either completely ignore or they just don't get. They don't understand. I mean, now, in my state, in Pennsylvania, we do not have an anti-discrimination law. So I could go into a bakery. Well, I'd have to travel quite far for that. But any business. I can go into any business. They can refuse me because I'm gay, and there's nothing I can do because we don't have that law, and there is no federal anti-discrimination law. So, I mean, if your state has the law, then you're protected. If the state does not have the law, there's nothing you can do. And that's the sad thing, and that's the problem I have run into personally. Bridget's run into it. You know, her family has. And I'll send you the links, Eugene, if you want to post the interview I did with her. It was pretty good. She really hit some good points, but yeah, that's what makes this whole persecution stuff crazy, because we're the ones actually being persecuted, or those that support.
And just to sort of give you a perspective on that from Canadian side, in Canada, and I've actually gone through human resources program in college, so I'm familiar with this. And also I have done hiring and firing for business, and you cannot even hint that you want to know something like, is this person gay? What religion are they? You can't even ask, like, you know, it's a little extreme, but like, even if you ask somebody their favorite color in an interview, they could conceivably come back and say, you didn't hire me because you discriminate against people who like blue. Like, it's that strict. And like, when I first started doing interviews for hiring people, I had to go through an afternoon of training, and the training basically was, here's what you're allowed to ask and here's what you're not allowed to ask. And it's very thorough. And like, even things like if a lady comes in for an interview and she looks pregnant, we are not allowed to ask, are you pregnant? Even though that would mean to the business, if she's the best candidate, we hire her, she goes on maternity leave 2 months later. And in Canada, you have to pay, you have to provide a job for that woman after a year. So for Canadian business, hiring someone who's already pregnant can be quite burdensome, but we're not allowed to even hint that we want to know. So it's like a whole, and this is like, this right to work thing would never fly here. And if now in Canada, you can legally fire someone for any reason you want. However, if you fire them for an unjust reason, your business will be paying out the nose for having done so to that employee. So you'll be paying for them to live rather decently while they look for their next job. And most companies don't want to risk that. And they can't even sue under common law, which is different than the Employment Standards Act. They could actually sue under common law for more damages than what they would get strictly under the Employment Standards Act, at least in Ontario. So it's a whole other ball of wax over here.
Yeah, as far as employment and persecution there, that's a whole other piece that we'll definitely end up dealing into at some point in the future. But that's a whole big piece that we really don't have anywhere near the time to deal with now, because we're almost getting done. But
I just wanted to point out that it's the American style is vastly different than a lot of other places. Like, I think in Europe there's a lot more protection for workers as well, and that those same protections against discrimination in Canada also transfer to housing as well. So you're not allowed, if you're a landlord, you're not allowed to discriminate based on sexuality or gender or religion or any of that stuff either.
Yeah, fortunately there's a lot of places on our side that have similar laws in place. I don't know if it's on a state basis or localities, but it's nice to know that there are at least some protections for some folks. And something tells me that we should probably end up talking with Callie again sometime in the near future to really delve into these a little bit more also. But we'll have to see about that. I'll mention about Callie again before we get out of here, but let's see about wrapping this guy up, because we're getting pretty close to the end of it all. And you'll forgive me, I've had a really, really long week of not nearly enough sleep, so I'm really starting to drag my butt. So we should really see about getting on out of here. So I guess I'll hit you guys down one at a time and see what you want to tie this whole thing off with. Beth, I'll get you at the end to since you've got a lot more formalized stuff, I'll have you kind of button it all up on that angle before I take it. Joseph, what would you like to close us out with as far as your perspective on everything so far?
Really nothing to add. Just underlining that if somebody wants to exercise bigotry, then they should advertise that fact. That means have a warning on the door. If somebody's not going to be served, they should be warned ahead of time.
Oh, you're going to love my closing then. Love this. Bridget, I always feel bad because there are some times where I want for you to have more time to interact with, and I don't ever want you to feel like I'm not getting you or if I'm trying to pull you outside of whatever. So folks that might be wondering, you know, am I leaving her out? No, as a matter of fact, I try to pull. So what would you like to...
He's discriminating against blue people.
You know what?
Don't say the S word. Don't
You know what? You know what? It's tough. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to say it. Shit. Okay? Fine. What do you want to cap with?
I think there is a proliferation of these RFRA laws because Christians are starting to lose some of their privileged status, and losing privilege is scary. And so I think that they are trying to do everything they can to hold on to that privilege, and they don't like it that everyone else is being, you know, gradually getting equal footing. And losing privilege is frightening them. And that's about all I have to add.
Yeah, funny enough, that was a piece I was going to hit earlier, and I just completely skipped over it at the time. So thank you for pulling that one back in. Joey, what would you like to cap off your time with at this point?
Well, pretty much anything I would have said is pretty much covered. However, there is one thing I would like to note is that if you think this is a new thing in America, it ain't. And there's good evidence of it going way back. If you want one of the strongest pieces of evidence of this sort of thing happening, here's a good example. Building codes. Zoning laws dating back to like 1916 in New York, separating, you know, where you can live in the city based on, you know, your income, your heritage, your ethnicity, your religion. You want to talk about how kooky things get? Have a look at that.
Fair enough there. Heretic woman, you get your go on this one. What else do you want?
I'll just kind of reiterate what I said before, is that any of these people who are whining about persecution don't have a bloody clue what persecution actually is, and I have zero sympathy for it, and my reaction would be, suck it up, buttercup, and learn how to live like everybody who doesn't have the privilege that you do. And Bridget's absolutely right. They're afraid because they realize that their privilege status is waning, that they're not going to be just automatically accepted. Oh, well, you're religious. Okay, well, you get to do whatever. That's your religion. No. That's going away, and they're freaking the hell out, and that's why this crap is coming around.
Works for me. Beth, what do you want to cap everybody else's off with before I go ahead and wrap us entirely?
Bridget was right. Excuse me. Was right. You know, it's the losing relevance point, And Joey hit on it too with the, it's basically old news regurgitated. And you can see that if you look at the agenda, there, look up Judge Tom Parker. He's a protege of Roy Moore, and his work with the whole abortion issue is now being transferred. His strategy is now being transferred over to the LGBT community stuff. But it goes back to basically, excuse me, you know, going back to Huckabee's comment, you know, was he doing it on purpose or was he just being stupid? You know, I think, I mean, from my personal, you know, he has a plan and he really doesn't care about discrimination against a distinct class of people to carry out this plan. And it really, I mean, the right does have a plan. And it goes, and it touches on what everybody just, you know, capped off theirs with, is that it begins with a reformed interpretation of free exercise clause, or they actually do want to repeal the First Amendment. They want to also abolish the Civil Rights Act of 64 and 68, which touches on what Joey's point with the zoning laws. That's where they came from. And 64 and 68 basically made that so you can't do it. They want to get rid of it. We're seeing it with the voting rights. And they want to implement their theology, their theocracy in order to govern. It's a plan, and it's a dangerous one.
So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to kind of wrap this all together with part of an exchange that I had some while ago, as a matter of fact, an exchange that I ended up having on a web forum back in April of this past year. And we were going back and forth in this particular exchange, and fortunately I kept copies of the exchange as it was going on, because I thought the person in particular was going to play dirty pool with editing their commentary so that I would look like I was talking about stuff that didn't exist, because I didn't trust this person to be fair, I guess the best way. But since we've been talking through this whole big thing about who's supposed to be doing what and their religious ideology getting into the way of it all, and are you right for doing it? Why are you wrong for doing it? I ended up having this as part of the exchange that I thought afterwards was something I actually felt very proud for. And it's very rare for me to actually feel pride. I mean, real deep down pride. I mean, Joey will tell you very easily. I will play up in a lot of situations where I fake that kind of level of pride and whatnot, but actual, that kind of, like, serious deep-down pride is exceedingly rare for me to do. And it all came out because of the wedding cake fiasco. And the finale of this exchange, as far as I'm concerned, was my commentary, which was this. If the baker has an open-to-the-public storefront, and they normally sell cakes to the public there, and they normally customize those cakes on request or for a fee, and they normally customize those cakes for wedding themes, and they decide they will refuse to service someone that just walks in, requests a cake to be customized for a fee for a wedding theme, because the baker thinks there is something wrong with the wedding based on reasoning that is not, quote, legally recognized, these are my quotes, legally recognized, i.e. religious objection, which could be same sex for Christianity, one could be divorced, therefore not eligible to be remarried, Catholicism, could be legally or civilly divorced without a get, as in Judaism, then yes, they are performing an illegal act by refusing service to someone of a class of people using religious bigotry as the excuse. That's what it comes down to. If your job in any other situation says you're supposed to do this and that's your job, and you say you're not going to do the job for a reason that is not legally recognized, you're in the wrong. Is it ethically wrong? That's a different matter entirely. But if you're going to cry persecution because you don't want to do what the law says you're supposed to do because you think that you shouldn't have to, good news for you. There's a little piece in the law that says everyone is supposed to be treated equally under the law. Here in the United States, that's one of the bedrock foundations of our legal system. No one is above it. Theoretically, there are a few exceptions. But the general public, you're under the law, same as everyone else. You're supposed to follow the law, same as everyone else. And if you don't, you will be prosecuted, not persecuted, under the law, just like everyone else. You don't believe me? Ms. Davis didn't believe it, and she went ahead and she paid the price, so to speak. And with the way things are going, she probably will again.
No, everybody else is paying the price.
We'll see. This cake company, they're going to end up paying the price sooner or later, and it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger every time. So what are you going to do? Generally speaking, I'm assuming that most people are good. They're going to do the right thing. When you end up butting heads against somebody that isn't going to do it, that isn't going to do the right thing, what are you going to do? Most of us don't have any idea what we're going to end up doing in that particular situation because it's one of those hypotheticals. But in some of these areas, it's not a hypothetical. It's real. Do the right thing. If something's wrong, stand up for the little guy or girl, because sooner or later, you're probably going to need their help. And it's a hell of a lot easier to get help from somebody else if you've already given them your help. Of course, it also helps to have the law behind you. But we can always talk about that later. As always, everyone, thank you very much for your time and spending part of it with us. We know full well that we are certainly not the lowest tier podcast out there, but we're sure as hell not going to be winning any awards. But thanks for finding something worthwhile in what we talk about and finding something that we do to be worth. As always, I want to thank the panel for being here tonight. Joseph, thank you very much for your time. You have yourself a good morning.
Thank you, and you too.
Joey, you take good care of yourself and stay off the roads as much as possible, of course.
Ha, 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 fuck you.
there's a story behind that. Don't worry about it. But in all seriousness, just stay safe, man.
You can't tell me what to do.
Yes, I can. You just don't have to do it. Bridget, of course, you take good care of yourself, hon. Have a good morning, and thank you. That's great. Nodding works really good on audio. I appreciate that.
Good night.
Heretic woman, you have yourself a good morning. Try to stay warm up there, huh?
I'm trying. I've had a heating pad on my back the entire time because I'm freezing. So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you know what? I completely skipped over it, but Bridget, did you have anything you wanted to plug, by the way?
No. Not until next year.
Okay. Joseph has something he ought to be plugging.
Yeah, that's what I was about to find out. Joseph?
Oh, right. Atheist Apocalypse. When's the next one out? On the 12th. 2 weeks.
Yeah, the 12th.
And that's when I make my first appearance.
It is. And that's atheistapocalypse.com in case anybody was curious. And there's a Facebook page as well.
Thanks, Deborah. I'm bad at this.
I know. It's okay. I'm trying. At least I got you to say the name.
Yeah.
There's that. Joey, did I know what the answer is, but I'm going to ask it anyway because otherwise it would be persecution. You got anything you want to plug? I was going to say one, but
You're lucky I can't find it right now.
You're quite right. All right. Heretic Woman, yeah, plug all the things.
You can just wait right there, Shu.
Oh, there's the gun. We knew there had to be one around somewhere.
It's America. They're all over the place. Going. Yeah,
so as Joseph mentioned, there's atheistapocalypse.com, and we released episode 4 about a week ago, and it's really good, and you should go listen to it. And like, 5-star ratings on iTunes would be really good, because then Paul would stop pestering us to get everyone we know to leave 5-star ratings on iTunes. So, like, do that, please. I'm going to let Beth have the other one. And, yeah, I think... Oh, and if you're curious about the Atheist Apocalypse cast at all, we just did an interview with the Atheist Podcast, that's A for Canadian, A, Atheist Podcast. We just did an interview with the group, and so you can check that out. I'm not entirely sure when that's going to be airing, but they record every Friday, so it'll be out this week, I'm sure. And they have a page, so that's the Atheist Podcast. That's with the two Daves and Kryn and Maley. So, and I got to hear they do the Big Black Gay Dave's newscast. So that's kind of cool. I enjoyed that.
That was fun. Yeah,
it was fun.
It's only audio, right?
Yes, audio only. But that's okay.
That's too bad.
Because when Big Black Gay Dave is trying to read his newscast, all the other people are making faces at him on Skype and trying to get him to, like, lose composure.
Showing so, their ass.
And of course, I brought the water bottle, because why not? So, yeah.
Best $4 you ever spent.
Best $4 I ever spent, you're damn right. So there is that, and I'm going to let Beth have the rest of it so I don't have to talk so much this time.
Yay. Sure enough. And, of course, our special guest tonight, thank you so much, Beth. I hope that you had, I don't know, a fulfilling experience with this. I don't know what the right word is.
I will say this to tonight. I am actually quite impressed that what you did touch on, because a lot of people really don't know, and we only hit a few of the minutiae of this whole issue, and I'm really impressed with you guys. You restored my faith in humanity.
It's all we're trying to do, just one vlogcast at a time. It's going to take a friggin' long
time. That's right. We could talk on this for 12 hours and still have stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
There's turning out a case a day almost. I mean, and I've been blogging about this stuff now for almost 7 years. And I'm still not done. So, yeah, it's a lot to cover in 2 hours. But there's two primary places you can find me. The first one is Monday nights at 9:30, Google Hangouts, Atheist on Air, Beyond the Trailer Park. Deb is my co-host, as well as Ashley Townsend of No Religion Required. And our guest this week is David Rand, and I don't remember the secular Freethinkers.
Atheist Freethinkers. Oh, yeah, it's a Canadian organization. And David was one of the speakers at the non-conference on the blasphemy panel. So we're going to be speaking with him on Monday. Yeah. And that's 9:30 Eastern. And apparently we're losing daylight time tonight, so, okay. Eastern it is.
I don't think we are.
No.
It used to be October 2nd, but I think it's November now.
That's what Katie said when we logged on, was don't forget to change your clock. And I was like,
you know what? Katie's a big-ass liar. Don't even listen to her.
I think it's like November 1st now instead of October 2nd.
Yes.
Okay. Well, then, whatever. Katie, you're trying to mess us up, gal. Like,
okay. Yeah, I was going to say, oh, boy. Hope you wait for work.
You know what? Your Androids and Google devices will be perfectly fine. Apple, just don't throw it out the window. Don't even worry about it. Beth,
I have a BlackBerry. It's immune.
Whatever you've got that's black, you can keep it right now, okay? That's good. Beth, plug all the things before we get you out of here.
And my blog is Havoc and Chaos, and you can find it on blogger.com. And it also connects. I do a Havoc and Chaos Live segment on our show on Beyond the Trailer Park, and there's links to that, which is on Podbean under Havoc and Chaos as well. So if you want to just listen to audio, you can do that. There are links to I've been delving into video, but that's where I'm at.
Fair enough.
At Dune9998.
On Twitter.
Because, you know, everybody's... No, because everybody's doing the Twitter thing, and after we close up the recording, I'll shut up. After we get done with the recording, I'll tell everybody what I was just thinking. A couple of real quick notes for everybody. I was on Imaginary Friends show 289 and 290. Yes, 289 and 290. Specifically, Imaginary Friend Show 289. Jake, you and your friggin' editing machine, so help me, one of these days I will get you back for this. I swear I will get you back for what you did to me. If you don't know what I'm talking about, listen specifically all the way through to the end of 289. Thank you. Thank you so very much.
That's okay. I got a surprise blooper of myself added to the end of the last episode of Atheist Apocalypse. So
great. That's just great. Yes. And by the way, Ross Bouch, screw you, man. Screw you. Anyway, so we got that. Callie Wright, apparently. Saw on the Facebooks that she had a great talk earlier today. Callie, yes, I did call you, and you sent me to voicemail. You.
Ooh.
I just called to congratulate her just out of the blue because it was just a thing, and I ended up going to voicemail, so that's okay. Callie, yes, it was me. I hope that you had a great time. Congratulations. I don't know what's going to be going on for the next show just yet. My apologies for getting stuff late. I've been having a little bit of a hard time coming up with topics because I've had stuff that's been, like I said, you know, keeping me up a little bit later at night. So if you've got suggestions for shows, please, by all means, send me a message. Send your stuff over to podcast@holycrapthevlogcast.com. Be more than happy to go over stuff. If you want to find all of the links for everything, just go over to holycrapthevlogcast.com and you can subscribe to all the stuff from over there. If you'd like to drop a voicemail to us and break into the cherry of the system, it would be area code 859-HCTV-554. It's 859-4288-554. And Twitter, Facebook, G+. Facebook likes would be wonderful. I don't really push that a lot, but I'm hearing everybody else doing it, so it's the in thing now. Just kids are doing the Google machine and such, I guess. I don't know. Whatever it is, just do that. That'd be wonderful. And there's a piece I'm trying to remember. I know I'm going to remember about it afterwards, but like I said, I apologize. I'm a little bit on the tired side. So... we'll figure it out later. I still have word out to Sam Mulvey from Ask an Atheist to come on with us. So if anybody wants to send an email over his way and say, hey, they're asking for you, that'd be wonderful. Thank you.
I can do that.
Sure, you can do that too. And
yeah. He talks to me.
He's Sam's a good guy. Sam was on once before, yeah.
Yeah. And, what about Becky? Want Becky too?
You know what? That would be wonderful because both of them would be in a perfect position because I specifically wanted to talk with Sam about the thing with the kid who went in with the clock. Mm-hmm. And I think both of them would be wonderful. I specifically wanted Sam because he's a ham radio guy, same as I am.
And she's a teacher. So.
Yeah,
exactly.
I think if they're both cool, but we'll see about that. Mickey. Meantime, we got to get out of here because it's late and my sugar levels have bottomed out because I'm gone through all of my coffee today.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Meantime, thank you all very much for your time. You take very good care of yourselves. Those of you that are in areas in the north and it's starting to get like really cold and wet, please just, be careful out there. I know the freezing weather isn't supposed to be here just yet, but if it does get there, just drive safe. Drive really, really safe, especially at night. And for everybody else, enjoy. We'll see you again next week. And as always, I wish you all the peace I no longer have. I wish you the strength that I've learned. I wish you well. And of course, I say mega nights for all of you, and I say mega nights for my lady too, because 10 years on, I'm still in love. Matane Fujin, I love you and I miss you. Dream of me. Till the next time we get together, everyone, as always, good night.
You've been listening to Holy Crap, the Vlogcast. Feel free to leave a comment on the show's website at holycrapthevlogcast.com, where you'll also find links to our Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Google Plus pages. Theme music provided by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. On behalf of all of us here, thank you for listening.